now have Ms. Copplestone.
Thank you, sir. Just while Ms. Copplestone's setting up, we've just sent through her summary statement, and it comes along with a Word version of the end of condition hearings and a PDF. So that we had to press stop somewhere, and we stopped updating those conditions at lunchtime. So they won't capture any of Ms. Copplestone's thinking since then.
No.
The other point to note, and Ms. Copplestone's, Copplestone would agree, is that although they're referred to as throughout various summary statements as Ms. Copplestone's conditions, they were very much a collaborative effort in which she consulted with all of our witnesses. So we have some of them hanging around behind us, and I just make that point because if necessary, it might be appropriate for Ms. Copplestone to speak to them on occasion.
Sure. And I'll just do some preliminary. Just remind me, Ms. Oliver, that I have to ask another question of this witness for Ms. O'Reilly. But two comments. First of all, I think my fellow commissioners would join with me acknowledging that your first report was extremely helpful, well written, and helped us enormously orientate in terms of the application and understanding the issues. So we were very grateful for the clarity of writing, I think, when reading this report. So appreciate that. I see there was a joint witness statement done in late August that was with the landscapes, architects and the planning. Do I take it, because I'm conscious that you've been doing this exercise of the conditions as a running dog, and do I take it that there is no value given the completion of conferencing in a further refinement or something, some time before the final submissions of KeyRail to look at those, that version, and come make it slightly more mature if you need the time? I'm not saying you do need the time, but if that opportunity exists, or if you think, well, no, it's really going to be where it is and any differences will remain. So what I'm really saying is don't think that this is the last point in the journey if you need a little bit longer. And certainly would give you that time before the closing for a period just to make sure you haven't, in the rush of running to deal with it, not covered points fully. So just bear that in mind.
Yeah, I think that would be actually very helpful, and it would be useful to perhaps reconvene with KeyRail to see if they also had reflected on that.
Yes, I think that might be useful, because otherwise we start doing comparing and contrasting with multiple versions, and it actually does get a bit bewildering. I'm sure it's bewildering for you, but it is for us as well.
Yeah, I have to apologise. Well, not apologise, there is a lot of track changes, and I appreciate that this has been...
we gave them a clean version.
Yes, so you have a clean and a track change version just to help you navigate that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kia ora, Mr. Chair. Sorry to interrupt. I don't appear to have any version, and I'm just wondering whether whether those summaries have been sent through to all of us, or perhaps through Kath, Oliver. But I don't appear to have it.
Okay, so we'll just check. An email did come through recently. We'll just check why you don't have it.
Maria isn't on the distribution list for that one.
That's all right. Distribution lists can sometimes mysteriously change. So we don't have the track change version, so that might be useful to have as well. No, so we did actually find, but we all, I think, did find your report extremely helpful in terms of grasping the issues and what was going on.
Thank you. Are you happy, Maria, that I proceed? She hasn't got that yet.
No, it still hasn't come through, I'm afraid.
We're just waiting for some things to come through. Yeah.
Ah, something big.
There you go.
Sure, that's it. Here it is. Thank you.
Okay.
And are you sending through the track change as well?
Oh.
Yeah, okay. So we're still also waiting for a track change version, but we'll carry on assuming it'll come.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Anita tōku ingoa. I prepared the Section 42A planning report on the freight hub with assistance from my colleague Phil Percy. You've asked me to address the following matters, which I will do in this statement: the extent to which the panel's recommendation to KiwiRail should engage planning considerations that overlap with the Regional Council, what balance should be achieved between the use of outline plans versus conditions attaching to the NOR, the use of management plans as a tool for managing effects, and in relation to the outstanding information gaps, to identify for you where there is remaining uncertainty, which can be satisfactorily addressed by conditions, and whether there are any areas of uncertainty that are not able to be addressed through conditions. So, turning to the first of those issues, during the hearing there have been a number of discussions about whether the Section 42A reporting team has strayed across the lanes. I would like to briefly reiterate some of the overarching reasons for the reporting officer's approach before dealing with some specific matters. KiwiRail has chosen not to seek regional resource consents concurrently with the NOR application. KiwiRail has not provided detailed information as to the scale, characteristics, intensity and significance of effects that relate to regional planning matters, for example, ecology, air, natural hazards and water bodies, or the way in which those effects will be avoided, remedied or mitigated. These gaps have made it practically difficult for the reporting team to determine the potential extent of the adverse effects of the freight hub proposal, or the adequacy or availability of proposed mitigation measures to address those effects. The challenge has been that while we consider we are required to consider all effects of the freight hub, we are also expected to accept different levels of information for different environmental effects based on assertions that they will be covered later. In some instances, this has been difficult to accept. For example, where Council's technical experts are providing advice that KiwiRail's assessment of effects is likely incorrect, such as with natural character and ecological issues, or where, despite our inquiries, we do not have complete confidence that later processes will address all relevant effects, and I refer you there to Ms Ryan's summary yesterday. Essentially, our inquiry has been an attempt to obtain sufficient understanding in a holistic sense of how those effects might influence the appropriateness of the freight hub in this location, considering the proposed design and its uncertainty. We have assessed the character, scale and intensity of adverse effects with an eye to integrated management and whether those effects can be appropriately avoided, remedied or mitigated, noting cautiously that some of the effects we assess will be managed at the subsequent consenting stage. I acknowledge that it would be inefficient to duplicate the detailed assessment or imposition of controls that will be undertaken at the regional consenting stage. However, I consider it would also be inefficient if KiwiRail finds it necessary to make a future application to alter the designation because regional consents are unobtainable without sufficient design changes, design changes. It also seems likely to cause undue uncertainty and anxiety for affected landowners. It would also not, in my opinion, be consistent with sustainable management if we did not address an effect based on KiwiRail's assertion that it would be addressed later, only to find out that this was incorrect. So I'll turn now to some specific topics, the first being ecology. submissions have established that there are amenity, cultural and intrinsic ecological values present within the designation extent, even if it is not clear whether there is significant indigenous vegetation or significant habitats of indigenous fauna. As evidence in the submissions of Meriti Taipana, Diane Tepini and Ngati Kaufata, the functioning and presence of ecosystems, whether these are pristine or not, is relevant to the relationship of Māori and their culture and traditions with their ancestral lands, water, sites, wahitapu and other taonga. I recognise the Regional Council's primary role in relation to freshwater and terrestrial indigenous biological diversity. However, I also understand that territorial authorities have a function to provide for amenity values, cultural values and the intrinsic values of ecosystems under Policy 6.1b to c of the One Plan, that's the regional policy part of that plan, and Part 2 of the RMA. Ms Quinn does not agree with the conclusions in KiwiRail's ecological assessment and considers that the ecological values of the site are likely to be understated. Air quality. Part 2 of the RMA directs the management of the use, development and protection of resources in a way which enables people to provide for their health and safety and which safeguards the life-supporting capacity of air. Maintenance and enhancement of the quality of the environment is a matter that decision-makers under the RMA must have particular regard to. Territorial authorities also have responsibilities for the integrated management of effects of land use and development, including amenity effects. Under the One Plan, again the regional policy statement, territorial authorities have been allocated responsibility for managing the potential for incompatible land uses to establish near each other, where this impacts on air quality, and that's Policy 7. KiwiRail recognises that there is likely to be adverse effects arising from dust, which will require active management, and has proposed conditions to address operational dust emissions. Submitters have raised concerns about the potential amenity, health and wellbeing effects of dust. I therefore consider these effects fall within the scope of effects to be considered through the NOR process and that it is appropriate to include conditions addressing them. The reporting officer's proposed conditions seek to avoid localised adverse effects on amenity values, human health, property and the environment arising from the generation of dust in close proximity to sensitive receptors through real-time construction dust monitoring, construction management and amendments to KiwiRail's proposed conditions for operational dust management and dust effects on water supply. Sorry about that, I knew I'd do that at least once. KiwiRail previously proposed to prepare a construction dust management plan, which has been removed from its proposed condition set. I would expect to see management of construction dust addressed in an outline plan, and therefore consider it is appropriate to include conditions which instruct that future outline plan process. One of the reasons for the Mid-Central Health Board's support for the Council's proposed conditions is that these would provide overarching and consistent conditions that apply to all construction activities, rather than just to individual activities such as earthworks, such as might be applied through regional consents. Dr. Helvet for KiwiRail agreed that it was appropriate to monitor wind conditions and undertake air quality monitoring for particulate matter during construction. However, KiwiRail has not offered conditions to implement these recommendations. On Ms. Ryan's advice, the Council's proposed monitoring conditions specify the type of monitoring, which is real-time PM10 monitoring concurrent with PM2.5, that should be used to inform management practices to address amenity and nuisance impacts. Fine particulate monitoring will provide appropriate information to manage the larger particle components of dust, as well as important data to determine the potential health effects of finer particulate matter discharges, which is likely to be required to demonstrate compliance with regional plan standards, managing two birds with one stone. Not chickens or eggs. Won't go there. In summary, I consider the Council's recommended conditions, the end of hearing set, are a reasonable response to the lack of clarity around the character, intensity or scale of discharges of dust from the freight hub and considering the potential effects. While the regional plan covers aspects of those effects, there are also potential effects for which the territorial authority has specific responsibility to address. I do not consider that any overlap in this area would be burdensome to KiwiRail, and in my opinion, they strike the right balance. So, I'm going to talk now about natural hazards. The Section 42A planning report sets out the policy framework for natural hazards that the panel must have particular regard to in coming to a recommendation on the NOR. Policies 9.1 to 9.5 in the RPS set out the responsibilities for managing natural hazards with the intention that there is an integrated approach between the One Plan and district plans. The need for an integrated approach was the reason for the reporting officer's recommendation that the stormwater management framework be provided to both authorities. Having revisited this after the panel's discussion with Mr Arsenal, I am comfortable that either approach the reporting team or key rails could be adopted. The rules in chapters 14, which is discharges to water, and 16, which is diversions of water, of the regional plan, will address the loss of floodplain and displacement of floodwaters from the filling in and raising of the land. Stormwater effects relating to quantity, water quality, flood risk, erosion and sedimentation will be addressed by rules in Chapter 14. That's in the regional plan. Considering this consenting framework and the expert advice of Mr Arsenault and Ms Boehm, I consider that the potential stormwater and flooding effects arising from placing the freight hub in this location can be appropriately avoided or mitigated. One policy that I did not specifically reference in my report is policy 9-3 in the regional policy statement, which relates to the placement of new critical infrastructure in an area likely to be adversely affected by natural hazards. I consider that some elements of the freight hub will be critical infrastructure. However, by raising the level of the freight hub, the critical infrastructure will not be placed in an area likely to be inundated by the 0.5% AEP flood event, and therefore this hazard will be avoided, which is consistent with the policy requirements. I consider a similar interpretation can be applied to the other elements of the freight hub under policy 9-2b. Turning to other natural hazards, the regional policy statement requires that future development should be managed such that any increase in risk to human life, property or infrastructure from natural hazards is avoided where practicable, or mitigated where the risk cannot be practicably avoided, and that's policy 9-4. The district plan requires that earthworks should not increase the risk posed by natural hazards, and built development should not take place on unstable land unless it can be demonstrated that the hazard can be avoided, remedied or mitigated. Any built development on areas subject to liquefaction should be located or designed in a manner that suitably addresses the hazard on the site. I therefore support KiwiRail's proposed condition 34B to prepare and submit a geotechnical report documenting the physical suitability of the land for the proposed development, and that's subject to some minor amendments to require that report to be prepared before they undertake detailed design. Okay, that's what I wanted to say on some of the specifics of the overlaps with regional consenting matters. I'll turn now to the question that was asked of me regarding the role of the outline plan versus conditions on the designation. In my opinion, the outline plan process provided by Part A of the RMA is not the appropriate place for defining the scale or significance of adverse effects. The determination of those matters should be informed by input from communities and stakeholders, which is not provided for within the outline plan process. The ability to make changes at the outline plan stage is also limited, particularly where changes might be required to address adverse effects on the local community or mana whenua. Therefore, my recommendations for conditions seek to establish a number of hard limits on advice from technical experts to provide a level of certainty for the community that the effects arising from the detailed design, construction and operation of the freight hub will be no more than what is envisaged at this NOR stage. Okay, management plans as a tool for managing effects. Management plans are common in large complex projects where design details are not fixed or known, and there is a need to retain a level of flexibility to make changes at the detailed design stage. I consider that if management plans are to be used, a level of certainty should be achieved at this NOR stage so that the objectives of such plans is clear and carefully scoped. The standards which the management plans seek to achieve are set out in standalone conditions so that these can be appropriately enforced, and that the scale and significance of acceptable effects is established at the designation stage rather than through the management plan. So I've attempted to reflect those principles in the condition set. I also consider there should be meaningful opportunities for the community and stakeholders to have a say in the development of mitigation set out in management plans. Over the course of the hearing, the conditions which provide these opportunities have been strengthened, and we've had an extensive discussion with Ms. Lindsay about that this morning. Information gaps. During the hearing, KRL has provided further information and proposed amendments to conditions which provide a level of comfort that certain effects can be addressed satisfactorily. Commissioner Marson asked that I identify those areas where there remains insufficient information to, firstly, determine if that full envelope of effects has been identified and captured by conditions, and secondly, whether those effects can be appropriately managed through conditions. So I've reflected on this, and I consider the following areas of uncertainty remain. Maria, no surprise, the first one on that list is cultural effects. Sorry, I've Commissioner. Shouldn't refer to you by first name. There is currently very limited information before the panel about cultural effects. As a consequence, there is no certainty at this stage that KRL's proposed conditions or the limited amendments that I have recommended to those conditions are adequate to address effects on values that are not clearly identified for the site. I just want to pause there and say I have deliberately not proposed extensive changes to the Mana Whenua framework conditions because I understand that KRL and Mana Whenua are working through those conditions, and I don't want to preempt or double up on that. So that is why there are, you know, tweaks around the edges, if you like, to those conditions. Ecological effects. An incomplete assessment has been undertaken of the ecological values of the site, and there is a high policy bar to meet under the NPSFM that will relate to later processes. Therefore, it is uncertain as to ecological mitigation, compensation or offsetting measures that might be required, and this could prove to be significant. In discussions with Ms. Quinn, we propose to address this with a condition requiring ecological surveys prior to detailed design. And just on that point, I reflected on the question that was raised, I think, yesterday to Ms. Quinn about the ecological survey. And in the condition set, I have gone back to a version of the condition that more closely reflects my original recommendation, and I have inserted in there a reference to the territorial issues in particular around cultural and amenity values as well. So, yeah, a little bit of toing and froing with that condition, but I've settled back on that version. Noise effects. The full envelope of effects is not established and will not be until detailed design, but conditions are available to address some of this uncertainty by setting hard limits or bottom lines. The appropriateness of the residual effects on neighbours remains as a related consideration, and the actual effects will depend on detailed design. And I'm going to just caveat it to say I wasn't in most of the conversation with Mr. Lloyd, so if that's moved on since I've written that, I'm going to just put a caveat there. You may have settled somewhere slightly differently on that one. Yeah. Air quality effects. The full extent of air quality effects, in particular the cumulative effects of the freight hub operations in combination with emissions from trains and trucks, has not been identified, and Ms. Ryan remains concerned that there is potential for the NES on air quality standards for PM10 to be breached. While this is also a matter for the Regional Council, there is potentially a regulatory gap, as the Regional Council does not regulate mobile sources of PM10 through the Regional Plan, and we are not able to propose conditions to address that gap. Flooding effects, final one. There is little information about the potential effects of filling in the floodplain. Mr. Arsenault indicated in his evidence that these effects will be dealt with at the regional consenting stage, but like the ecological effects, there is some uncertainty as to how those effects will be managed with potential requirements for off-site mitigation. Okay, just a couple of other matters that I wanted to cover. Some of these are responding to questions that have been through the hearing. The first, of course, is the design framework. And there's been some discussion as to the purpose and scope of that, as recommended by the reporting team. As you mentioned earlier, we've had a joint session to explore this, and the outcomes are summarised in a statement provided to the panel. Our intention in recommending a design framework was to provide an overarching framework that is able to address the range of external effects generated by the freight hub, so that the final design recognises the complex interplay in the design of those mitigations, addressing noise, lighting, dust, traffic, cultural and visual effects, and to provide for the desire expressed by the community and mana whenua to have a say in designing that mitigation package. And I felt this was difficult to achieve through a process of providing feedback on individual management plans. While I appreciate that many of the design principles and opportunities fall within the remit of that landscape and design plan, others do not, or only do so partially. And, for example, I list some mitigation examples there that I don't think sit logically in the landscape and design plan. I consider there is real benefit in a document that sits above management plans in a project implementation hierarchy, so that all management plans are developed in a way that recognises the compendium of design principles. If a framework was adopted, the drafting process should be flexible so that it reflects the preferences of Ki Rau, the community and mana whenua. I do not think that multiple iterations would be necessary, as once established, the high-level outcomes will not need ongoing adaptation to actively manage effects in the same way that management plans are designed to do. From my perspective as processing officer, the Cultural and Environmental Design Framework, which was created as part of the Te Ahua Tūranga project, was a useful tool to provide for holistic consideration of that wide range of design matters that I've listed there. The CEDF went through three iterations before being settled, with a final version informed by extensive input from mana whenua and the community and stakeholders. Outline plans were subsequently accompanied by a completed design review template, which demonstrated how the detailed design met and demonstrated those design principles and desired outcomes. And from my perspective, those design reviews provided a really useful insight into the detailed design, given that I hadn't been part of that, but was the recipient of it, if you like. I have listened carefully to discussion about the design framework today. Commissioner Marston has accurately captured in his discussion with Ms Whitby the purpose or concept that we had intended to, in relation to that design framework. It's not intended to direct principles or outcomes that undermine the body of information that currently exists, but to build on it in a way that allows for community involvement and agency in development of the design principles and outcomes, including with mana whenua. It is intended that that framework will be providing a valuable and user-friendly compendium, to use your words here, for the community, drawing from information currently contained in disparate sources and expertise. I accept that the words of the conditions need to be written so that it's clear how this process will occur and to properly capture our intention and ensure this process and the framework have that meaning. So in the time that I've had between that discussion, I've worked on those conditions as far as I'm able, but I appreciate the opportunity to refine those further. Just a couple of brief points on other planning matters. Permitted baseline. Ms Bell provided further explanation regarding her application of the permitted baseline in her verbal summary. I am comfortable with the understanding that it is not applied as a legal permitted baseline, but more as a general explanation of what type of activity is anticipated for the area. And as I set out in my report, I don't think a permitted baseline applies here. Lapse period. Ki Rau requests a 15-year lapse period, given the scale and complexity of the activities needed to acquire land, prepare the operational platform, and put in place mitigation. Several submitters are concerned that that lapse period will expose them to a long period of uncertainty. I recommended that the lapse period was reduced to 10 years, which is broadly in line with the indicative construction program for completion of stage one, with a little bit of wriggle room. Based on the reporting officer's social and economic evidence, I consider a 15-year lapse period creates prolonged uncertainty, which will have negative consequences for investment and relocation decisions and thus economic and social well-being. Council's economic experts say an extended period of uncertainty will defer both public and private spending until there is some certainty that the freight hub will be built. And that uncertainty relates to timing, not location. This will include decisions about the timing of public investment in strategic roading improvements, such as the Ring Road, as well as the Council's planning or an investment in urban structure and for city growth. Commissioner Marston has questioned whether a more sophisticated lapse condition could resolve these issues, and there has been previous discussion, which Mr Jessen also covered, about establishment or implementation conditions. And again, with input from KiwiRail, I'd be happy to assist if further drafting is required. And I think they need to absolutely provide input to that. The MPSFM. The MPSFM is one of the matters to which the panel must have regard in coming to their recommendation. I do not consider that the directions in the MPS can be disregarded, even though the Part 3 implementation clauses have not yet been incorporated. I consider the MPS's directive and prescriptive as to what to be as to what is to be included to give effect to the MPS objective and policies on natural wetlands and loss of river extent. The objectives and policies in Part 1 of the MPS provide strong direction regarding natural wetlands and rivers, and there's also the direction in Clause 3.1 that nothing in Part 3 limits the general obligation to give effect to the objective and policies in Part 2 of the MPS. I acknowledge that much of the responsibility for implementing the MPSFM falls to the Regional Council. However, the 2020 version of the MPS places much greater emphasis on integrated planning for freshwater outcomes across both levels of local government and on management of the effects of the use and development of land that falls within the remit of the City Council's responsibilities, and that's particularly emphasised in Section 3.5 of the MPS. As I've indicated above, this is a relevant document, and giving effect to Te Mana or Te Wai cannot necessarily be deferred until the Regional Council has gone through that process of adding local detail to its interpretation. As I read the NPS, it makes Te Mana or Te Wai considerations relevant at all times. In any event, no matter how Te Mana or Te Wai is eventually articulated for the region through the Schedule 1 process, it will still need to achieve the MPSFM objective by putting the needs of the Wai first and foremost. Mana whenua have a central role in articulating what Te Mana or Te Mai means for the region and perhaps for particular water bodies. And mana whenua have expressed aspects of those values in their submissions on the NOR. Te Mana or Te Wai has references to key parts of the RMA, the intrinsic values of ecosystems, the life-supporting capacity of air, water and soil, and the quality of the environment. These concepts are already signalled in Part 2 of the Act as being important and as not being human-centric. There is an inherent status of these natural things in the environment which already is already recognised by the legislation and which are forefront of the assessment under Section 1711, even if the status of certain provisions is subject to debate. Weight to be given to positive effects. I do not agree that freeing up of land at the existing rail yard at Tremaine Ave for other land uses is a positive effect of the UNOR. This will be the subject of a separate future process. In terms of the weight that can be given to the potential for the freight hub to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, that was a question that Commissioner Sweetman raised with Ms Bell. There is a direction in the MPS on urban development that planning decisions should contribute to well-functioning urban environments that, as a minimum, support reductions in greenhouse gas emissions. I agree that the freight hub will assist in meeting this objective, but I consider that the wording "as a minimum" means that such environments should become the status quo. You'll be pleased to know I'm nearly through. Points of clarification. So Mr Schofield's oral submission for PowerCo, Commissioner Sweetman requested clarification as to whether Railway Road at the south will be closed and designated by KiwiRail. My understanding is that the section of Railway Road from the south up to and including the junction with Roberts Lane will remain open, but that the that the designation extends over this area to provide for the works required to modify the junction between Railroad and Roberts Line and for the closure of the level crossing. Keyrail's proposed condition 101 provides for the removal of the designation from those areas which are no longer necessary for the ongoing operation, maintenance or mitigation of effects following completion. So therefore the designation can be removed from public roads once those works are complete. I previously recommended that a management plan condition might be appropriate to address Powerco's concerns, which I understand it from his oral submissions Mr. Schofield supports. Further to that, I understand that Keyrail is in discussion with Powerco, to resolve these issues. So again, those are a set of the conditions which I have more or less left alone, because I understand that they will probably respond to those in their right of reply. Okay, the last section I have here is just some very brief notes on the latest condition set, by way of an intro or an entree to the discussion. I'm sure we will have. So the first one is on sequencing. The conditions provide for the early establishment of the community liaison forum and the mana whenua framework now, so that these parties can contribute to the design framework, and that the design framework and then in turn informs the management plans. There's some advice notes which, where there is jurisdictional overlap, will hopefully be helpful in understanding what the intention is behind that. Engagement conditions, we've talked about those this morning, the intention being that they provide for early and frequent engagement through the lifetime of the development of the freight hub until all the stages have been constructed and opened. In terms of the water bore, that is critical infrastructure which is has status under the regional policy statement and in a policy direction in that document to provide for its ongoing operation and expansion. So I've made some suggested amendments to that conditions, so that doesn't impede the expansion of that facility, but retains some flexibility of how that issue will be resolved. We've talked about damage to road conditions and we've tried to craft conditions to address those issues. And I recognise that they are awkward in places. And if we had a project agreement, some of the awkwardness may have been resolved. But there we go. I think we've tried our best with those. Train operation conditions. Mr. Moyle, in response to a question about the fragmented facilities in the yard, stated that their rail freight is a high-hazard industry with lots of risks. There are safety risks and efficiency concerns with trying to build trains from all different parts of the yard. That's partly the rationale behind the proposed safety and design and concept of operation conditions. And I consider that those conditions go to the health and safety of communities, which is an RMA effect that the panel is interested in. And the other part of the rationale for those conditions is the potential of those processes to influence the design of the freight hub, including any possible changes to the elements shown on the concept plan. For example, if that concept of design operation shows that complex movement of freight around the site will not work safely and efficiently, then things might need to be rejigged. And that's something Mr. Than spoke to you about. I haven't proposed certification of those processes, but on Mr. Than's advice, I consider that they should be carried out before detailed design, and that evidence of that should be provided to council to provide certainty that they have been carried out in accordance with that timing. And that will help with a transparent record should any material design changes result. Connections to the North East Industrial Zone. The evidence suggests that a direct connection isn't needed immediately, but that might be desirable in the long term. So we've tried to provide some flexibility for that to be flushed out through the road network integration plan in the future. And I also, on that, think that the master planning process that Mr. Murphy talked about will also inform that. and that sits outside the contingency, obviously. And then finally, the design framework, I've covered that, but I've tried to make some tweaks to that suite of conditions to better reflect the discussion earlier. And that's the end of my written, or my summary statement.
Thank you very much. So, Commissioner Sweetman, how do you want to proceed with this?
Commissioner Marston, I'd like to propose we have a break so that we can stretch our legs and gather our thoughts before we go on to question Ms. Copplestone, because we have been going on.
So is 4:15 okay? 4:15? Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much.